Support for the Kids Count Radio Show has been provided by One America Financial Partners. Headquartered in Indianapolis, the One America companies offer life insurance, employee benefits, and retirement plan products and services that help meet the financial needs of individuals, families, and businesses. More information about One America can be found online at oneamerica.com.
Time now for the Kids Count Radio Show. From the Indiana Youth Institute, all across Indiana, dedicated Hoosiers, youth agencies, and communities are working to make a positive impact in the lives of children and families. We tell you their stories and look into important issues affecting kids. It's the Kids Count Radio Show. And now, the Vice President of Advancement for the Indiana Youth Institute, Glenn Augustine.
Are you ready for the Hour of Code? Yes, the Hour of Code is coming up this week. Have you got it marked on your calendars? Our guests today certainly hope so, and they'll be talking about what coding is, what it means, and what it can mean for your children's future. That's our topic today on the Kids Count Radio Show. We're with the Indiana Youth Institute and also brought to you by our friends at One America. Today's topic is coding for kids. And in the world in which we live, in which smartphones and tablets and computers are everywhere, smart TVs are everywhere, you get the latest app and the latest game, and you go to the movies and see things that are in animated and in 3D, you cannot escape the fact that all of this leads to people behind the scenes who are programming these apps and programs and making movies with computer generation, and it all gets back to coding. That's the sort of DNA, if you will, of the computer world. So joining us today in studio is Karen Jung. She's the executive director of the Next Tech Foundation. And Eric Odell is the business marketing and IT program specialist with the Indiana Department of Education. Thanks for joining us today. Karen, you've been out in that tech world for many years. So if you could, tell us, what is coding?
Coding is really the instructions that you give to a computer to bring a solution to life. That's the most basic rudimentary definition. And really from the world of software and application development, it is just that, bringing applications, whether it's a Facebook application or a more business-oriented application, to life and available for users.
And where does the education for this really begin?
It can never begin too early is the importance part of it. If you think about even underlying coding is basic principles of computer science, which are critical thinking, problem solving, being able to look at a problem, whether it's a very discrete or it's a abstract problem, and applying the necessary logic to arrive at a solution. That becomes the foundation, which then you use coding, which also think of it as a programming or another language, to bring that solution to life through technology.
And so I'm going to date myself, but I remember taking classes in Fortran. So what are the languages of today, so to speak?
You know, really, if you think about, there are a couple different. One is what we talk about, web development, which is what most of us would identify with when we look at a mobile application or a website. Those are things like HTML, CSS, JavaScript. Those bring things to life for us on the screen. But then you also have more programming languages around database languages, so SQL, being able to contain information. So there's a whole number of different layers of programming languages, if you will.
And Eric, when you look at this from a Department of Education perspective, how is it that we try to get students to start learning these basic skills in coding?
So we start at a very low level of actually almost in kindergarten, where it just starts teaching them how to use devices and use them in an appropriate manner, and then build many of those skills, as Karen mentioned, of problem solving and critical thinking, so that when they get to the actual upper levels of actually doing the code, they can do that much more simply and don't have to do the basics.
So it's immersing them in technology so that it becomes, we see it. We see kids how intuitive they become with the technology, much better than we are, or I am, not being a digital native.
Yeah, kids, yes, they all have cell phones, they all know how to use technology, but in some cases, they don't know how to use it appropriately. And so a lot of what we do in the K-12 area is teaching them how to use it appropriately, and so that they are productive with it and that there is an end result.
So tell me a bit, what does it mean to use technology appropriately?
So using technology appropriately is using your cell phone to do a research project or to gather information while you're out, say, on a field trip. You know, you can use your phone to take pictures and then go back to class and develop a report using those. And so this is at our lower levels that we would do that. At a higher level, it's actually doing a code to create a website or a 3D model or something along those lines. So instead of just sitting there thinking technology is a tool for a game, it is something that you can actually use to help you do work.
And Karen, you're nodding your head. So how does that apply out there in the real world?
We talk a lot about, with young students, how do we take them from being just pure consumers of technology and playing with the devices that they do every day to understand that they could be the creators of that next generation of technology. Who's going to build that next big Facebook application, if you will, or tool that they're used to? And it's through those coding activities that they start to unlock the power of what can be done with technology beyond just playing with it.
And so you talked about teaching young. And so in addition to just being immersed in the technology, learning how to do it, use it appropriately, which means maybe doing a research project, a multidisciplinary use of the technology to gather information. Karen, is there also, you know, is it math? Is it, what else do students need to know to help them as they get into that sort of coding experience?
You know, certainly those are kind of the quantitative thinking classes, if you will, certainly apply, and they're very foundational elements. You know, a key part of teaching coding is even how to help students understand how the math that they're learning today, the science that they're learning today, applies to the real world. And coding is kind of that bridge that, if you will, from what's happening in the classroom and making sense of it in the real world for the student.
And then we're going to be talking to a student and a teacher a little bit later about their coding experience. But Eric, are enough schools teaching coding?
We've definitely been seeing an increase in the number of schools teaching coding. I don't think we're at the right level yet, but it's definitely increasing.
And so what, the right level, I guess, would be 100%, right?
You know, that's really not for me to say. It's kind of based on the business and industry out there.
And so is it, what typically would be some obstacles that might teach schools from or keep schools from teaching coding?
Normally, it would be just getting the teachers up to the level of their comfortability with the content so that they can teach the students how to use it. It's a relatively new area for teachers. Luckily, we have a lot of professional development offerings coming up around the state that help address that.
Karen, how important is it then? You've been in the tech industry for the industry to get back into the schools and try to help fill this gap that maybe there is because their teachers aren't, you know, maybe the production of teachers hasn't kept up now with where we're going or need to go to make sure more children get exposed to coding education.
You know, if we think of what role industry plays in this whole conversation, they are the ultimate benefactor, if you will, of the talent that needs to be produced. If you look at studies even within Central Indiana, we know that by the year 2025, there's going to be 51,000 new technical jobs. Nearly half of those will go unfilled because there aren't enough qualified individuals in the talent pipeline. So it's really industry's responsibility to step as far back into the pipeline process, if you will, and engage students, engage educators, one, to help them understand the importance of it. Because I think in addition to what Eric said of lack of curriculum, if you will, and trained teachers, it's a general understanding of the education system of knowing the importance of teaching these skills inside the classroom. So I think industry having a voice in that advocacy role, if you will, but then also providing input to dictate curriculum and creating opportunities for students to become engaged in the workplace as soon as possible, even if it's an awareness of knowing what the career possibilities are, and then continue to provide deeper levels of experience and engagement as students become more engaged in the technology and coding itself.
Is there a fear that because these jobs are in demand and they pay really well, it's hard to draw people back into the classroom because their pay is not going to be what they can make out in the real world?
we do see that in some instances. Many times the teachers that are teaching these types of classes actually do come from industry. So they're career switchers that, you know, were in at a tech company for a number of years and decided they really wanted to go teach students. So yes and no.
Karen, any thoughts on that?
And just echo what Eric said, that there are fantastic established programs out there like Microsoft Teals, which has a structured way to bring somebody from the workplace, train them, put them inside of a high school classroom. And I think it's industry's willingness to embrace innovative programs like that that will only help the education system. But there is that challenge and that fear that we've faced it as we go out and train teachers, that what if we get a teacher so proficient, then they're going to go off to industry. And that is, obviously, it's a legitimate fear, but one that you have to kind of embrace and still move forward with.
Eric, are there standards based around computer science education like there are around math and English and those sorts of things?
Yes, there are. We're actually in the process of developing computer science standards for K-8, and those will actually be embedded in our science standards, but they won't be limited to the science realm. So we expect them at the K-8 level to be integrated into English, math, and science in all of those areas. In addition, at the high school level, Indiana is actually a little bit further advanced than other states. We have a series and a system of courses, all which have standards that really help students focus on the various areas within computer science, not just coding, but databases, informatics. And then we even have a special topics course that allows schools that want to be really innovative to present an idea to the department that we can help them build and potentially add new courses in the future.
Because of the skills that you need, perhaps math skills, but that sort of critical thinking and perhaps some ability to work on a team, to think through a problem, these might be courses you think would lend themselves to students looking for advanced placement. So are there advanced placement opportunities in secondary education here in Indiana as well?
There are. There's actually two AP courses. One is a brand new course called Computer Science Principles, and it's a great exploratory class. And then there is the other course, which we've had in the books for decades probably, is just AP Computer Science, and its primary focus is on Java.
So is that incumbent upon then the school districts to be able to offer that if they can?
Yes.
Okay. We are talking to Eric Ogle, who's the Business Marketing and IT Program Specialist for the Indiana Department of Education, and Karen Jung, who's with the NextTech Foundation. After our break, we're going to bring in a teacher who's out there teaching or helping to teach coding and one of her students. That's next on the Kids Count Radio Network.
I'm a little brother.
I'm a starfish mentor.
I'm a big brother.
It doesn't matter what you call yourself.
I'm a mom.
I'm CEO and president of Old National Bank in Indianapolis.
It doesn't matter what you do.
Be a mentor.
It's a matter of giving time and your heart.
It doesn't have to take a lot of time.
In our case, it's just an hour a week.
Just get out and mentor.
Give a child in Indiana a better hour.
Find out how at abetterhour.org.
At One America, our vision is to deliver on our promises when our customers need us most. I'm Scott Davison, President and CEO of One America. We are also committed to being an exceptional corporate citizen at home in Indiana and across the country. One America funding supports a variety of civic and charitable organizations, and our employees donate thousands of volunteer hours to nonprofits each year. At One America, we are committed to living our values by positively impacting the communities we serve and being the best we can be.
Welcome back to the Kids Count Radio Show from the Indiana Youth Institute and One America. We are talking about coding. You know, if you pick up a smartphone or a tablet, you've got an app on there. You've even got apps on your smart TVs now. And all of that computer technology is made possible by coding, which Karen Jung, again, give me that basic definition. I love that. That was one of the best definitions I've heard in a long time.
Coding is really just telling a computer what you want it to do. It's a step-by-step instructions to solve a problem.
There we go. Beautiful. So somebody out there working on those step-by-step instructions to solve a problem is Tara Sharp. She's a math coach at Plymouth Community School Corporation and the coordinator of the Girls Who Code program. Tara, welcome to the Kids Count Radio Show.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Now, Tara, I read your story, and I love this, because you say you were not that great of a math student, and yet you're a math coach. How did that happen?
Interestingly enough, I had a phenomenal father who made me think about things outside the box, who challenged every statement out of my mouth with prove it, and really made me defend myself and my actions. And as I became a teacher at Plymouth, I started out in special education, and I really enjoyed working with kids in math. And so then I just worked towards that. As an elementary major, I was able to teach math at the sixth grade level, even though I didn't have that specialty. But for me, it was the ability to break problems down into pieces and help kids visualize the process. And I just fell in love with it.
And so, Karen, you are there at Plymouth Community School Corporation, are the only one in Indiana with a Girls Who Code Club. Is that right?
To my knowledge, that is correct, yes.
And how did this come about?
In my new role as math coach, I was at home one evening about 2 winters ago, and I was watching a segment on 60 Minutes, and they were featuring the Girls Who Code. I found it just absolutely fascinating. I came through school in the 80s and graduated in 1990, and I didn't have those opportunities at my school, and I sat there wondering what my life could it have been a different path had I had those opportunities. At the end of the segment, they segued into the application process, so I Googled it, I applied, and we were accepted within 6 months.
Okay, and a leading force in that was our guest today, Jessica Drury, is that right?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Jessica, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Tell us how you got interested in coding.
I was interested in coding just kind of by a random game of chance, really. It was one of those pop-up ads that showed up for a online coding school that I had never done anything like that before, and it interested me. So I ended up clicking on it, and it really opened up a new world to me. And it was something that I really enjoyed and found really interesting.
And so had you been involved in interested in computer science before this?
I hadn't really been interested in computer science or computer programming before that at all. I actually I took interest in foreign languages, and that's what I was originally planning on doing.
And how is coding like a foreign language?
I mean, it's not much different from any foreign language you would find. My interest had been in Chinese and Japanese, and the switch over to coding to me wasn't that much different. It's a string of words that mean something to the computer. My interest had switched from an interest in Asian languages to an interest in computer languages.
And how did you talk to other girls in the school and say, hey, I want to start this club, Girls Who Code. Do you want to join? What was the response?
It actually had formed more without my knowledge, and it was something that had been put on the school announcements that I took interest in.
Okay. And Tara, how did the word spread, and what was the response?
Okay. Once we were accepted and we were able to find a local programmer who could come in and teach the code aspect, my interest is the organizational piece. And then Mr. Perkins is a local programmer, and he came in and using the Girls Who Code curriculum, then we made announcements for any interested girl in grades 6 through 12. And we were able to secure a site here at the high school where all the buses unload, so that location wouldn't be a hindrance to our girls. They could all come to this location. And then they just signed up in the office and started to show up. What was interesting about Jessica is she had already developed that interest. And one of the reasons I remember her speaking at one of our first meetings was, you know, it was able for her to come in and have support of someone in the field to guide her. So I think going back to your previous segment of how can the businesses and how can industry come in and help and support our teachers and our schools, I think fundamentally here is that we need those volunteers. We need them to come in and support the teachers and teach teachers who are interested like myself, what can we do to help the kids and to encourage the kids and to get them into these fields that were underrepresented, especially the females.
So, Terry, you really form a team because your person who comes in and teaches the coding, Terry Birkins, he doesn't have the classroom experience. He needs your help in getting the students together, getting into small groups when they need to, and going through instructional models while he needs that from you and you need the coding from him. Is that right?
Absolutely. We could not do this. We are a team, and one without the other, we would be doing a disservice to the girls. It really takes both of us.
And Jessica, what do you hope to do with this knowledge that you're gaining in the Girls Who Code Club?
I really hope to go into the computer programming field. It's just, it's something I really love to do, and it's something that everybody needs. You can't walk 2 feet anymore without saying something that requires programming.
And anything in particular you want to do in that field?
I've been looking a lot at internet security.
Okay. And Karen Jung from the Next Tech Foundation, as you hear that story, how would you like to see that replicated across the state of Indiana? Why is that important?
You know, it's critical that we get young students, and especially those that are underrepresented. Female is a huge population, as well as individuals of color and different ethnicity backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, that the sooner that we can get students introduced to what careers in coding look like, the more we're going to accelerate that growth and closing that gap of that talent pipeline that we talked about. So whether it's bringing and trying to launch more Girls Who Code clubs around the state, or if it's just even more grassroots efforts, if you will, to bring other coding club resources to the market, I mean, that's a critical piece of the puzzle.
So tell us, part of that spreading the word is this Hour of Code that is this week, that's right?
So Hour of Code is actually happening as part of Computer Science Education Week.
December 7th through 11th.
Exactly. And so it is a grassroots movement started back in 2013 by an organization called Code.org. And their goal really was just to get individuals to try an hour of code for no other reason to demystify a lot of the mystery and the around what coding is. I think that is a large challenge that even students face or educators face, is just not aware of what is coding. And really that hour of code is to break down all those myths and to get more students engaged and wanting to go deeper into it. And just since 2013, over 141 million people have actually tried an hour of code through the code.org platform.
So how can people get involved in this hour of code?
A great thing is there's a website, hourofcode.com. So it's a fantastic resource for educators. If you want to coordinate an hour of code event at your school, or even it's in even not just educators. I think one thing to stress here, and I think Tara's a good example, is you don't have to be a pure coder to be able to facilitate one of these activities. The beautiful part of the Hour of Code site is it provides every resource from minute-by-minute descriptions, as well as a set of activities that students can engage in, including offline activities. So I think one of the important things that we've talked about here today is computer science is critical thinking, problem-solving skills, that you can even learn those without technology in your hands. So again, visiting that website will give an individual everything they need to do, and even a student can then engage in an hour of code on their own without being part of a larger group.
Tara, have other teachers from across the state or close to you come to you and ask you how you start one of these groups? And we have about 20 seconds.
I've actually had two school corporations with business teachers and an instructional coach reach out to me in the last 6 months.
So you give them the word, it can be done. Is that right?
It absolutely can be done.
All right. And we want to thank Tara Sharp and Jessica Drury from Plymouth Community School Corporation, where they have the Girls Who Code program, for joining us. Eric Ogle is the Business Marketing and IT Program Specialist from the Indiana Department of Education. And Karen Jung is the Executive Director of the Next Tech Foundation. Thank you for talking to us today about coding. Get out there this week and try an hour of coding. It may change your life and your children's. Remember, kids count on you.
Support for the Kids Count Radio Show has been provided by One America Financial Partners. Headquartered in Indianapolis, the One America companies offer life insurance, employee benefits, and retirement plan products and services that help meet the financial needs of individuals, families, and businesses. More information about One America can be found online at oneamerica.com.